Darlington Hall, July 1956. It seems increasingly likely that I really will undertake the expedition that has been preoccupying my imagination now for some days. An expedition, I should say, which I will undertake alone in the comfort of Mr. Faraday's Ford. An expedition which will take me through much of the finest countryside of England to the West Country, and may keep me away from Darlington Hall for as much as 5 or 6 days. The idea of such a journey came about from a most kind suggestion put to me by Mr. Faraday himself one afternoon almost a fortnight ago in the library. In fact, as I recall, I was up on the stepladder dusting the portrait of Viscount Wetherby when my employer had entered. On seeing my person, he took the opportunity to inform me that he had just that moment finalized plans to return to the United States for a period of 5 weeks between August and September. "You realize, Stevens, I don't expect you to be locked up here in this house all the time I'm away. Why don't you take the car and drive off somewhere for a few days? You look like you could make good use of a break. I'll foot the bill for the gas. You fellas, you're always locked up in these big houses, helping out. How do you ever get to see around this beautiful country of yours?" This was not the first time my employer had raised such a question. On this occasion, a reply of sorts did occur to me as I stood up there on the ladder, a reply to the effect that those of our profession did actually see more of England than most, placed as we were in houses where the greatest ladies and gentlemen of the land gathered. I contented myself by saying simply, "It has been my privilege to see the best of England over the years, sir, within these very walls." Mr. Faraday did not seem to understand this statement, for he merely went on, "I mean it, Stevens, take my advice, get out of the house for a few days." As you might expect, I did not take Mr. Faraday's suggestion at all seriously that afternoon. The fact that my attitude to this same suggestion underwent a change over the following days is no doubt substantially attributable to the arrival of Miss Kenton's letter. Her first in almost 7 years, if one discounts the Christmas cards. But let me explain further. The fact is, over the past few months, I have been responsible for a series of small errors in the carrying out of my duties. As so often occurs in these situations, I had become blind to the obvious, that is, until my pondering over the implications of Miss Kenton's letter finally opened my eyes to the simple truth that these small errors of recent months have derived from nothing more sinister than a faulty staff plan. It is, of course, the responsibility of every butler to devote his utmost care in the devising of a staff plan. Indeed, I am in agreement with those who say that the ability to draw up a good staff plan is the cornerstone of any decent butler's skills. At the same time, it is only fair to point out that my task in this instance had been of an unusually difficult order. What had occurred was this. Once the transactions were over, the transactions which had taken this house out of the hands of the Darlington family after 2 centuries, Mr. Faraday let it be known that he would not be taking up immediate residence here, but would spend a further 4 months concluding matters in the United States. In the meantime, however, he was most keen that the staff of his predecessor be retained at Darlington Hall. This staff, he referred to, was nothing more than the skeleton team of 6 kept on by Lord Darlington's relatives, and I regret to report that once the purchase had been completed, there was little I could do to prevent all but Mrs. Clements leaving for other employment. When I wrote to my new employer conveying my regrets at the situation, I received instructions to recruit a new staff worthy of a grand old English house. I immediately set about trying to fulfill Mr. Faraday's wishes, but although I was pleased to hire Rosemary and Agnes on Mrs. Clements's recommendation, I had got no further by the time I came to have my first business meeting with Mr. Faraday in the spring of last year. It was during the course of this interview that Mr. Faraday made his request of me that I do my best to draw up a plan by which this house might be run on the present staff of 4. Now, naturally, I have a reluctance to change too much of the old ways, but there is no virtue at all in clinging, as some do, to tradition merely for its own sake. And so, finally, I came up with a plan which, while perhaps not exactly as Mr. Faraday had requested, was the best I felt sure that was humanly possible. Almost all the attractive parts of the house could remain operative. Admittedly, our present team of four would manage this program only with reinforcement from some daily workers, a gardener to visit once a week, twice in the summer, and two cleaners each to visit twice a week. I fear, however, that I did not perhaps assess my own limitations, and although my experience and customary caution in such matters prevented my giving myself more than I could actually carry out, I was perhaps negligent over this question of allowing myself a margin. In the end, I believed the matter to be no more complicated than this. I had given myself too much to do. You may be amazed that such an obvious shortcoming should have continued to escape my notice, but then you will agree that such is often the way with matters one has given abiding thought to over a period of time. One is not struck by the truth until prompted quite accidentally by some external event. So it was in this instance. That is to say, my receiving the letter from Miss Kenton. Containing as it did an unmistakable nostalgia for Darlington Hall, and, I'm quite sure of this, distinct hints of her desire to return here. This obliged me to see my staff plan afresh. The more I considered it, the more obvious it became that Miss Kenton, with her great affection for this house, was just the factor needed to enable me to complete a fully satisfactory staff plan for Darlington Hall. Having made such an analysis of the situation, it was not long before I found myself reconsidering Mr. Faraday's kind suggestion of some days ago, for it had occurred to me that the proposed trip in the car could be put to good professional use. That is to say, I could drive to the West Country and call on Miss Kenton in passing, thus exploring at first hand the substance of her wish to return to employment here at Darlington Hall. There were various aspects I felt I needed to clarify to myself before proceeding further. There was, for instance, the question of cost. Then there was the question of what sorts of costume were appropriate on such a journey, and whether or not it was worth my while to invest in a new set of clothes. I am in the possession of a number of splendid suits, kindly passed on to me over the years by Lord Darlington himself and by various guests who have stayed in this house and had reason to be pleased with the standard of service here. Many of these suits are perhaps too formal for the purposes of the proposed trip, or else rather too old-fashioned these days. But then there is one lounge suit which might well be appropriate for evenings in the lounge or dining room of any guest houses where I might lodge. What I do not possess, however, is any suitable travelling clothes. I calculated, finally, that my savings would be able to meet all the costs I might incur, and in addition might stretch to the purchase of a new costume. I hope you do not think me unduly vain with regard to this last matter. It is just that one never knows when one might be obliged to give out that one is from Darlington Hall, and it is important that one be attired at such times in a manner worthy of one's position. During this time, I also spent many minutes examining the road atlas and perusing the relevant volumes of Mrs. Jane Symonds's The Wonder of England. Mrs. Symonds was a frequent visitor to this house before the war, and it was in those days that I had first taken to perusing her volumes in the library whenever I had an odd moment. Indeed, I recall that shortly after Miss Kenton's departure to Cornwall in 1936, I would often glance through volume 3 of Mrs. Symonds's work, the volume which describes the delights of Devon and Cornwall. It was thus that I had been able to gain some sense of the sort of place Miss Kenton had gone to live her married life. It seemed in the end there was little else to do but actually to raise the matter again with Mr. Faraday. I decided the most prudent moment in the day would be as I served afternoon tea in the drawing room. As it was, I believed my judgment proved quite sound on the question of timing. The fact that things turned out as they did is entirely attributable to an error of judgment in another direction altogether. That is to say, I did not take sufficient account of the fact that at that time of the day, what Mr. Faraday enjoys is a conversation of a light-hearted, humorous sort. Knowing this to be his likely mood, it would certainly have been wiser not to have mentioned Miss Kenton at all. But in indicating my reasons for preferring the West Country for my motoring, I made the error of declaring that a former housekeeper of Darlington Hall was resident in that region. Mr. Faraday grinned broadly at me and said with some deliberation, "My, my, Stevens, a lady friend, and at your age." This was a most embarrassing situation, one in which Lord Darlington would never have placed an employee. "I'd never have figured you for such a ladies' man, Stevens," he went on. "Keeps the spirit young, I guess. But then I really don't know it's right for me to be helping you with such dubious assignations." Embarrassing as those moments were for me, I would not wish to imply that I in any way blame Mr. Faraday, who is in no sense an unkind person. He was, I am sure, merely enjoying the sort of bantering, which in the United States, no doubt, is a sign of a good friendly understanding between employer and employee, indulged in as a kind of affectionate sport. Such difficulties as these tend to be all the more preoccupying nowadays because one does not have the means to discuss and corroborate views with one's fellow professionals in the way one once did. Not so long ago, if any such point of ambiguity arose regarding one's duties, one had the comfort of knowing that before long some fellow professional whose opinion one respected would be accompanying their employer to the house, and there would be ample opportunity to discuss the matter. Not the way it is today, when on the rare occasion that an employee accompanies a guest here, he is likely to be some newcomer who has little to say about anything other than association football, and who prefers to pass the evening not by the fire of the servants' hall, but drinking at the Ploughman's Arms. However, let me return to my original thread. I was obliged to spend some uncomfortable minutes standing in the drawing-room yesterday afternoon while Mr. Faraday went about his bantering. As I had anticipated, he gave his kind permission after not too great a delay, and furthermore, Mr. Faraday was good enough to remember and reiterate his generous offer to foot the bill for the gas. I would, of course, have to write to Miss Kenton to tell her I might be passing by. I would also need to see to the matter of the costumes. But, all in all, I can see no genuine reason why I should not undertake this trip.